Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
This podcast is supported by Cartier. In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, Cartier shares testaments of love in all its forms from around the world. Please keep listening for today's love story later in this episode.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. When he was working in Nevada, Justin Race met a woman that he thought was perfect for him. The only problem? They'd never spoken outside of the online game Words with Friends. Justin's essay is read by Tony-winning actor Ben Platt. Ben stars in the new show The Politician on Netflix.
Her OkCupid profile mentioned that she was really good at Scrabble, so I sent her a message challenging her to a game of Words with Friends. "Loser buys the winner coffee," I wrote. "You game?" She accepted, but told me coffee wasn't possible. She was in China for the school year, teaching English, and wouldn't be back until July. It was now January. I had moved to Reno from Washington, D.C. 6 months earlier to take a job at the University of Nevada, and I was having trouble meeting people. Over those months, I had messaged more than 60 women and heard back from only 6, leading to 0 dates. So it seemed cruelly fitting that the first woman I really connected with had moved to China. But hey, a good Words with Friends partner can be even harder to find than love. Later that evening, she challenged me to a game at 6 p.m. for me, 9 a.m. for her. An odd first date, half a world between us, sitting on my couch with phone in hand, looking for bingos and hoping to draw an S or a blank. Play a move, send a message, repeat. We were evenly matched. I barely won our first game. Soon we were playing 2 games at once and chatting in both. 2 entirely different conversational threads, one serious and the other playful. We kept this up for 6 straight hours. At one point I had to slide my couch closer to an outlet because my battery was at 2%. Like any good first date, I didn't want it to end. We talked about everything from our childhood pets, her rats, Mr. Peepers and Tefnut, and my dog, Inky, to my fanciful dream of one day running a retirement home for animals. Geriatric cows and octogenarian pigs happily living out their golden years with nothing whatsoever expected from them. She told me the worst gift she had ever given a boyfriend was a giant Hershey bar. I confessed that I'm more likely to cry during a movie trailer than while watching the actual movie. I told her I always botch cliches. It's not like it's rocket surgery. Falling asleep that night, happier than I'd felt in some time, I wondered if I was being catfished. Those 6 hours had been too good, the kind of night you dream about and then suddenly the sun is rising. Ridiculous, flirtatious, or serious. Whatever the topic, it was always easy. The next night was no different, and I realized I had to start getting this down on paper. When a game ended, our chats from that game ended with it. Every 45 minutes or so, everything would disappear. I wanted to preserve all of it, proof that such things are possible. After a week, I told my best friend back east what was happening. She told me a story about a coworker who had an online relationship with a woman for 2 years. Now they are married. I laughed it off and thanked her, but I told her I had no illusions. We were always brutally honest about our future, namely in agreeing there wasn't one. It wasn't even clear that she was coming back to Reno, she would go wherever she managed to land a job. We were a most pleasant distraction for each other, but school would eventually resume for her, and I'd eventually meet someone in Reno. On the Words with Friends board, we were both masters of the end game, but there didn't seem to be any end game for us in real life. I also knew that it was the baked-in distance and the impossibility of a date that had allowed me to fall so deeply in the first place. In person, I am typically so shy in romantic situations that I can barely make eye contact with someone I've just met. With her, I felt free to open myself up entirely. 2 weeks in, after playing and chatting 4 to 6 hours every night, she warned me that she was meeting her father in South Korea the coming weekend and wouldn't be around to keep up our nightly ritual. It's strange to miss someone that you've never actually met. In the morning, I awoke to a message she had sent from the airport, waiting out a delay. This single message meant more to me than the thousands of others we had exchanged. When I took my first business trip as a single man a few years earlier, I remember wishing that I had someone to text from the airport. I had internalized the idea that love is having someone who cares about every utterly benign detail of your travel. I made it, I wanted to tap out. Man, I think I parked in the furthest possible spot. Ugh, the line in security is insane. Is it spring break or something? Okay, at my gate. Boarding. Shutting down now. About to take off. Smiley face. All those imagined texts with no recipient. It stung even more when my plane touched down several hours later with nobody to tell I'd arrived safely. Our 3 days apart didn't stall anything. After she returned, we slid right back into our routine of increasingly intimate disclosures. The times we each tried to rescue a hurt animal we came across, the worst thing I did as a kid that I still feel guilty about, growing up in broken homes, worst dating experience, favorite sex position, ever fake an orgasm? She agreed with me that the biggest commitment either of us could ever make would be combining our libraries, and that we probably shouldn't take that step until we had at least 2 kids. One night, I told her my memory is extremely selective. I'll remember she played the clarinet until 6th grade, yet consistently forget her birthday. It turned out that very day was her birthday. By that point, we had long stopped being surprised at the freakish number of coincidences. Fittingly, and as promised, I don't remember what day that was. Another night, I preemptively apologized and told her not to hate me, then played You Taxis, a triple word bingo with the X on a triple letter for 227 points. She messaged me a growl, and 5 minutes later I went to bed with a smug grin plastered across my face. I took a screenshot of my play, printed it out, and proudly showed my 3 interns the next day at work. It still hangs in my office today. And then, as I had long feared, something shifted. Two games at once turned into one. Our 6-hour chat sessions dwindled to 5, then 4, then 3. Eventually, we played a full game without either of us sending a message. At one point, I gathered my courage and asked if I'd said anything wrong. She was quick to assure me I hadn't. Yes, there were other factors at play. Her teaching break had ended and she was back at work. That same day, my mother called to tell me that her breast cancer had come back and she was having a mastectomy. 3 days later, my father ended up in the hospital with a blood clot, a complication from leukemia. Still, if there was ever a week when I could have used 6 hours of nightly companionship, that was it. We stretched it out for another few weeks, playing a single move per day, accompanied by a single chat, neither of us willing to concede the end. One night, I sent her a message thanking her for the last 2 months, letting her know that however unorthodox it had been, I had loved every minute. She told me she felt exactly the same. One day, we started what would be our final game. We each played a move. The next day, she didn't play. Nor the day after. 10 days passed before Words with Friends automatically killed the game. The last time I saw her screen name was with the message, "They timed out." Midsummer is when she was due to return to the States, but I don't know if she ever did. July was also my one-year anniversary in Reno. Yet, my happiest memories here have nothing to do with Nevada, or the mountains, or the university. They are of me sitting on my couch, furiously tapping away on a 3-inch screen, to a woman on the other side of the world. A woman I know both intimately and not at all. I know how she felt when staring into the eyes of a buffalo up close. I know she would love to see Owl Jeopardy, where every response starts with, "Whoo!" I know she gets mildly aroused talking about compound miter saws and has a weird thing for hands and likes to sing songs about her cat. But I don't know what she looks like when she sleeps. I don't know the sound of her voice or the feel of her hair. I don't even know her last name.
That's Ben Platt reading Justin Race's essay, "Words With I Wish We Were More Than Friends." We'll catch up with Justin and find out if he ever reconnected with that Words With Friends partner after this.
Hi, this is Eric Kim with New York Times Cooking. As a recipe developer, I spend a lot of my time trying to come up with dishes that are quick, easy, but also very special. For me, that means dishes like gochugaru salmon. It's a crispy salmon fillet with a salty, sweet glaze that bubbles up and candies. I love cooking this because it only takes 20 minutes. You can get this recipe and so many more ideas on New York Times Cooking. Visit nytcooking.com to get inspired.
When Justin Race's Modern Love essay was published in 2016, he'd been living in Nevada for a year.
I'd had a lot of trouble adjusting to the area. It just felt very isolated and very lonely. In the piece, I mentioned that my parents, each of them, were experiencing some health problems. Happy to say my mother got through her breast cancer, and she's in complete remission now. But my dad, his cancer came back, and it came back very aggressively and very violently. I was able to get back to Pennsylvania to be with him his last few weeks. But that was really hard. And that was, you know, part of the ongoing difficulty of being in Reno all that time. So even having someone to talk to on my phone in the evenings halfway across the world was better than nothing at that point.
After Justin's essay came out, he decided to reach back out to his Words with Friends partner and challenge her to a game. She accepted. Then he told her he'd written a story about their relationship, and he asked her if she was still in China.
Turns out she had gotten back to Reno that summer. So I was a little disappointed, a little hurt that she hadn't proactively reached out, but I asked her if she wanted to get together, and she said that she was seeing somebody, so she politely declined. We finished that game. The Words with Friends games always mattered a lot, however awkward the conversations could be here or there. But neither of us challenged the other to a rematch, and we just fell out of touch again.
That was in 2016. Then in 2018, Justin left Reno and took a new job at Purdue University in Indiana. Just a few months later,
she got in touch with me out of the blue. Again, challenged me to a game with Words with Friends. And I'm thinking, my God, it's been 2.5 years. You know, my dad's died. I had just moved to Purdue 2 months earlier. You know, talk about never quite ending up in the same time zone at the same time.
They did start playing the game again and talking, and eventually he asked her a question that had been on his mind.
What exactly happened when you got back to Reno back in 2016? And she said that 3 days after she'd been back, she went to a party, reconnecting with everybody, and she just hit it off with a guy. And they started dating almost immediately.
They were together for 2.5 years. And when she got back in touch with Justin, they had recently broken up.
It's a story of wrong place, wrong time. It's also a story of I was just in a really bad place in my personal life. So as much as I'd like to sit here and be saying, you know, she came back and we fell deeply in love and the connection was even more profound in person than it had been through the screen, that's not what happened.
But they are still playing Words with Friends today.
Obviously, the excitement, the flirtation, the sort of staring at your phone and seeing, did she message me, that sort of thing, that was all gone. But I'm happy to say that now we just have a sort of healthy, normal friendship insofar that something could be healthy and normal never having met. I do feel like I know her pretty well. I also have always recognized that there's many ways in which I don't know her and never will. But sometimes that's enough. Sometimes it's more than enough.
That's Justin Race. He's the director of Purdue University Press and lives in West Lafayette, Indiana. More after the break.
Hi, this is Eric Kim with New York Times Cooking. As a recipe developer, I spend a lot of my time trying to come up with dishes that are quick, easy, but also very special. For me, that means dishes like gochugaru salmon. It's a crispy salmon fillet with a salty, sweet glaze that bubbles up and candies. I love cooking this because it only takes 20 minutes. You can get this recipe and so many more ideas on New York Times Cooking. Visit nytcooking.com to get inspired.
Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times, says that Justin's essay speaks to the moment we're living in now.
Online communication allows them to fall really deeply, not really in love, but in kind of an infatuation, in part because they're spared that awkward personal interaction where they truly have to be vulnerable. You think you're being vulnerable online, but really you're totally safe, 7,000 miles away. But it still, raises that question of, what is connection? And is this a relationship? And I'd argue that it is, It's so revealing when he thinks about his time, the time that he spent there in Nevada. The main thing he remembers from that are not his colleagues or the days living there. It's all connected to this electronic pull of this woman halfway around the world. And there's no denying that that was real and that meant something. But like a lot of real relationships, it had its moment and then passed.
And here's Ben Platt on why he connected with this essay.
As a millennial, if you will, I certainly have a lot of dating experiences and relationships formed via my phone and via apps, and it's this crazy phenomenon of creating this intimacy with no context and no tone and just chats and games. And I've always been very fascinated by the way I can feel very close to someone before I've even met them, and sometimes when I do meet them I feel even less close and I feel like I wish I had remained in the chat. So this essay certainly struck a chord as far as building that connection via something that seems really silly and superficial. But it can be meaningful and make your stomach flip just with, messages and screens.
Thanks again to Ben for reading this week's piece. His new show is The Politician on Netflix. Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Caitlin O'Keefe. Original scoring and sound design by Matt Reed. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Additional help this week from Ben Brock Johnson. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Special thanks to Julia Simon, Anya Stremian, and Mia Lee at The New York Times. Additional music courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.